It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. And this week from the Football Zebras crew, we have Mark Schultz, Chris Seubert, and Pat Weber, and I'm Ben Oster. So let's just jump right in and take a look at a couple of things that caught our eye in the last week and saw that the false start penalties. There was some crackdown on them, specifically around the push play for the Eagles, and we're seeing it starting to expand out from there. So I'm going to hand over to Mark Schultz. What have you been seeing lately?
Well, just how controversial false start has become. For many years, it was one of the easiest calls to make. Someone jumps, the whole stadium sees it, the flag goes in the air. But today's athletes have practiced so hard and have it drilled so into them about the snap count and when to go, and they can time it down to the frame of the photograph. They can down to the frame, and it's very difficult to officiate. And with the excellent high-def TV and the super slow-mo replay, you can see when a player false starts, and the slow motion makes it worse, but there have been some false starts that I think these crews should get. But what do I know? There was a false start on the winning play in the Ice Bowl, too.
And you can't get any more iconic than that play. And as you say, on one side, you have players that know the snap count and are anticipating the snap and not doing it as a visual. On the other side of the ball, you wind up with defenders that are, like, particularly on kicks, they can watch and see a holder tap their finger to call for the snap, and they time that to come across the line. So now you have a lineman, an offensive lineman, who's getting a little itchy knowing that somebody's about to crash the line, and you have to react quickly. And, so it gets everybody a little bit twitchy there. But and particularly when we get some of these dense formations around these short yardage situations, and, you know, that the movements are just so subtle just to get someone to move a little bit here and there. I just like hit that a little bit is that, you know, we'll see some of the more overt ones where somebody just really moved visibly. But sometimes we see a false start called and we can't pick it up on the replay. It takes about three or four of them to see what actually had happened.
Sometimes it's an imperceptible head nod, just like a little nod of the head by a lineman or by the center. Sometimes it's a little voice inflection by the quarterback that'll draw them off. Sometimes it's even a shoulder dip by the quarterback, which would be a false start on the quarterback. Last year, in a playoff game, correct me if I'm wrong if it was a playoff game, but a lineman was in a two-point stance and he was wiggling his fingers in preparation for the snap. He was charged up. He wiggled his fingers just before the snap. They jumped into the neutral zone, and they called a false start on the hand wiggle, on the finger wiggle. It's very, very, very subtle at the NFL level. And the officials have a very difficult task. They're getting guidance, and they're getting a lot of good examples, but false start is no longer the one you can call in your sleep.
And the one game that you're referencing was the Lions, that one of the linemen did do a quick hand motion there, that it was just moving his fingers just enough to induce the reaction. And we tried to explain it during the day, and nobody was buying it because they said, no, we can see the defense moving. And that's exactly what it's intended to be. It's intended to be so stealth that you don't pick up on it. And, you know, and so then that grievance wore on there. Chris, what did you see over the past weekend here?
Well, as our readers saw, what I saw was the tipped ball in the Chiefs Bills game, which I think infuriated all the Chiefs fans out there and caused, I think, some confusion on the broadcast for sure when they came in. Carl Sheffers threw an intentional grounding flag on a play where it seemed to me that Patrick Mahomes was obviously in duress and was trying to get rid of the ball. And I'm sure he was trying to do it in a way where he would not get flagged, but he did throw it to an area that was without receiver. And then everything, all the announcers thought, okay, that makes sense. There's nobody there. There was a crew discussion, and because it's a crew penalty, they dropped the flag late. But on replay, you could see a very slight tip from one of the Bills linemen as the ball is going by. And Gene Steratore came on the broadcast, and he almost made it sound like that negated automatically the intentional grounding. And as we know, just looking at the rules and, you know, discussions with other officials, obviously, this is not the case. It is still a judgment call by the crew if this is intentional grounding or not. Andy Reid tried to challenge it, saying there was a tip there and that should negate it. They declined that because that is not a reviewable element of the play, as we wrote up. So there was really nothing to challenge. And unfortunately, and as we've discussed behind the scenes a little bit, I think Steratore coming in and not making that clear to the audience did not help the social media warriors out there understand what was going on. And I think that was something that needed to be communicated right away on the broadcast that, hey, this is different than pass interference where a tipped ball negates the interference later after that tip. That is just not the case. And it didn't decide the game. I mean, Buffalo clearly had that game pretty well in hand. And it did not seem to affect the ball enough that it would have reached a Chiefs receiver in that case. So that's what I saw, and it was an interesting call. And as Gene alluded to, it was something he hasn't seen in his years on the field. So it was worth discussing and obviously worth writing about.
And again, it was more of his lamenting that it was not reviewable because he felt that it was that it could have been materially affected of getting to a receiver. And this is part of the trap of having the rules analyst who, well, we were in the late window, so there was the national game for CBS. They did not have any other, so he was really focused on that one. But this does happen in some of the earlier windows when they kind of parachute in the middle of a game that they haven't been watching. But in this case, yeah, he was saying, I feel that this is affecting the pass, but because of the amount of time that they have to communicate everything, I don't think that guy came across clearly. And yeah, we saw multiple people, high profile accounts on social media really advancing it was a tipped ball. Therefore, it's automatically not intentional grounding. That's the case pass interference, but that does not apply to to intentional grounding. So, that's one of the things that, you know, had he had the chance to take it back and reword it, maybe, you know, he would do that just to kind of tamp down some of the controversy there, because the first thing right before the snap that Jim Nantz says, well, that's an error right there. And it wasn't an error. And when you also look at the fact that we looked at this one way and he sees that, well, maybe it did affect the flight of the pass enough. I think it's enough to say that either way, the league is going to support the call. They're going to say, well, you used your judgment. And so we're not going to fault it, because they don't want to throw out an interpretation on something like that for something that's rarely going to happen, if it's ever going to happen in this way ever again. And if you throw out an interpretation, you might wind up clouding or coloring judgments in other situations that aren't related. So I would think that they're going to go with a support on this one But I think that had a flag not been thrown, or had they picked it up and said, no, we don't have intentional grounding because of the tip, I think they would have supported that as well.
I think it makes sense that they didn't review it because it was still a subjective play, right? The league is not in the business of re-officiating an entire review. They are looking for objective black and white things. They've added the face mask. You know, if there was clearly not a grab of the face mask, they can jump in there. But they do not want to get in the business, because then that brings in the whole, do we have a sky judge then? Do we have some other video review that's going to re-officiate plays? And as we see, they're very hesitant to do that, I think, now and in the future, which is why, again, it makes sense that this was not reviewable play.
And that's the thing, is this was a compromise to that sky judge to have a replay assist function. And so replay is still staying within its bounds, with which is, you know, what has the ball touched? What is a player touching? What are the lines? You know, it's governing all of those aspects. If there's a way that you can apply that to certain areas, the competition committee has found these little carve outs that say, oh, okay, so, you know, we ruled face mask. Was there contact with the head? If there was, then we keep that flag down. If not, we pull it back up again. So, it still has some growing pains, but I'm impressed with the progress that has made in the 4 or 5 years that it's been around, that, that it has become very useful and really been part of the game. Let's take a look at, once again, Illinois high school football seems to hit our radar again. So let's head out to Illinois and Pat Weber.
Yeah, something must just be in the water in Illinois this year that keeps popping up. But in Illinois, this is our first weekend of playoff football, as it is, and I think in many states in the country. And unfortunately, one of the games came down to the wire between Porta and Fairfield. And Fairfield had an 8-6 lead, and Porta got the ball in the red zone, and unfortunately on fifth down kicked the game winning field goal. One of the well respected officials in my officiating group constantly preaches three core tenets. If you don't let them play with more than 11 players, don't let them snap the ball with zeros in the clock, and only give everybody the four downs they're supposed to get, then things are probably generally going to be okay. I think one of the things that happened was there was a timeout after first down, after a scramble drill. And then on third down, the quarterback, instead of spiking the ball, kneeled the ball down. So now everybody's scrambling. And in the confusion, when he spiked the ball on what was now fourth down, I don't know if the down box forgot to flip over, or if the officials just didn't have good communication, but there's something lost in translation. And on fifth down, unfortunately for everybody, the Porta kicks a field goal to win the game, and really just drives home communication, especially after timeouts, injuries, and in the scrambles of 2-minute drills, we have to be on it and communicating with everybody what down it is to make sure we don't lose a down.
So take us down onto the field for those who haven't been. You have in your mind one thing. You have a down indicator on your wrist, and you loop it around each finger to know which down it is. There's a down box on either side of the field. There's the scoreboard. There's players that may be saying, third down, fourth down, or whatever they might be saying. Get us down onto the field where every once in a while, I'm sure that this happens even to the past, where you're like, double checking, am I on the right down? Do I have the marker on my wrist the right way? Am I on the right finger? And how that gets resolved at that particular time. What do you do as an official if you have some confusion over the down?
I have stopped a game, and granted it's not been in the waning seconds in a scramble drill, but I have stopped a game and said, I have third down. And the crew comes in and says, no, we had that incomplete pass on first down, that 3-yard gain on second down. That's all we have. Okay, second down. Reset the play clock, wind the clock, here we go. You do that. That's saving the crew. And there are several articles on Football Zebras about saving the crew. And Bob McElwee, a retired NFL official, says, "You come now, whether you're a rookie on the crew or whether you're a 30-year veteran, come now. Don't ever come up in the locker room and say, you know what? I had some information that could have changed the outcome of that call. You come now. If you come and you're wrong, that's okay. But save the crew." I wonder if anybody on that crew, and we don't know, I haven't talked to the crew, and I'm sure they feel terrible. I wonder if anybody on the crew said, wait a minute, I had that spike on fourth down. Now, I know that the quarterback made a mistake and he kneeled down. And I'm sure the referee and the crew was thinking, wait a second, he kneeled down. That wasn't a spike. We need to wind the clock. Time's ticking. It's almost out. We're under 20 seconds. We have to wind the clock. Spot the ball. Okay, here we go. And they forgot that, okay, it's third down. That was third down, and now it's fourth down. Something got out of the regular rhythm of snapping the ball and in the between downs procedures, but still, that's something that cannot happen, and somebody has to save the crew.
I just want to pivot off that really quickly and point out something that you had written on Sunday, where the Bears were, they threw the ball over the middle of the field with the clock running, and there was a sure tackle. And we'll step us through what back judge Jonah Monroe did on that particular play.
Well, the pass was completed into field goal territory, and there was under 30 seconds to go. Monroe was ready to run up and spot the ball and probably run like crazy back to the goalpost and get ready for a field goal attempt. I think the Bears were out of timeouts, or get ready for a spike attempt. It was going to be first down. They probably would have spiked the ball. So he was running up to Loveland, the Bears receiver, getting ready to adjudicate the dead ball and spot the ball. But Loveland broke free, so suddenly he had to slam on the brakes and race to the goal line and make a judgment at the goal line. So might would have had sprained ankles at that, but nice job, Jonah Monroe.
Going back to the fifth down play, I was going to add that going back to the infamous Missouri-Colorado fifth down game, to Mark's point, with all the history kind of look back things that you've read, if I recall correctly, that one of the common tenets of that crew was everyone thought they were the one that was wrong and no one spoke up to save the crew. And that's why, especially in moments like that, if you think something is wrong, you got to speak up now and fix it.
And in 1968, we had the great Norm Schachter, referee, who was suspended for a game along with the rest of his crew, and a bunch of people who are very highly regarded in NFL history there. They were suspended because they dropped the down, and it probably wouldn't have affected the outcome, but it was right before playoffs, and you never know if a fourth and 20 is converted. So as we look at the playoffs here with high school, let's end off with some of the assignments are being handed out. The first week has been in the books, and we put out a survey that asked what different states do, and one of the things that actually kind of fascinates me is how coach evaluations come into the play of playoff assignments. And I've always said that if the coach gives you bad marks, then you must be a great official. So in the remaining time that we have left, let's discuss how this all works, in the various states and what your experiences have been.
The IHSA doesn't have a set observer program. There are observers that are former officials or people who work at IHSA that go out and look at crews, but usually you don't get observed until you are a potential semifinal or final crew. Rarely do you have somebody come out and observe you. The coaches rate the crews, each individual by position, after each game. And you can think of your own opinions on that. The coaches are busy coaching their teams to try and win. They're not judging whether or not the back judge was 12 yards too close and didn't give enough cushion on that deep fly pattern.
Also, there's just the fact that how many coaches really know officiating mechanics to really be an accurate judge? And, you know, there's definitely experienced coaches who seen officials, you know, a few times can get a feel if they believe the official is good or not. And they can probably be fairly accurate about that. But at the same time, it's hard not to believe that there's some bias that clouds some judgment on their ratings. But at the same time, as another Illinois official, I've always been of the mindset that ratings aren't that big of a deal when it comes to how they assign. I feel like the state takes their information from other officials and assigners, which is fine. So I think, at least for us, the best we can do is work our game and the ratings fall where they may.
And Chris, you had a chance to look at our survey that we sent out, and I'm not sure if you saw any particular trends or any particular areas that were interesting, whether or not there was more local control in some of the responses or if it's more at the state level.
You know, Michigan is similar to Illinois where they take into account sort of coaches' ratings, but we also do have a little local control where our assigners, it sounds like you guys have this too, Pat, assigners give a little bit of feedback to the state. I know in certain sports, local assigners get the first few rounds of playoffs. In Michigan, it's exclusively from the state to assign every round of the playoffs. So I think there's some, you know, it's not well understood necessarily how they do it. We do obviously have the coaches' ratings too. And if you look at our sort of written text, as far as in order to get a state final, you need a certain score to be above that level in order to get a state final, and so on and so forth. So there is that. But again, to Pat's point, how hard they look at that for each individual round, it's not clear. And, you know, our local associations, we have evaluators, and we certainly, at least I personally certainly get more pride from hearing from them going, hey, you're doing a good job because, you know, your mechanics are sound, your positioning is sound, all of that, versus a coach who might not like my pass interference call rating me low because of that.
I guess the grace is that now we have, you know, video is a little bit more ubiquitous at the high school level. The curse at the other end of the spectrum at the NFL, where every single play is down to, you know, they'll shuttle that tape back 10, 12, 20 times on just a 2 yard run, and more if it's got any other complicated elements. You had all of those plays, all those checks on every single play times every game. You know, that's like 1.5 million checks right there. And they're looking at, and people are coming down to a tenth of a point difference for playoff spots. So it gets hyper competitive at that end. And at this other end, it's a little more looser, but it does seem that they try to do it in the fairest way possible.
From looking at some of the responses we got, I mean, I think a lot of it just centers around transparency, right? Where some people in some states honestly don't even know how playoffs are assigned, which is a problem, I think. So, you know, I think officials, we get that, you know, we're not the best official in the world. There's always going to be someone better than us, right? But if we know the process that goes into it, I think that'll make every official out there working toward the playoffs, A, work harder to hit those sort of milestones and goals, and B, understand why someone with more experience and higher level games may get the nod over someone who's new. As long as that transparency is there, I think, in my opinion, I think most officials are perfectly content with the decisions that are made.
And every year you're going to have somebody, you're not going to be able to please everybody every time. But to those who got their playoff assignments this year, we congratulate you on your work. And as we get through the playoffs, good luck and see you later. And with that, we wrap up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. And you can catch us on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.